Well, we begin with some breaking news, and I'm trying to figure out what this means. Maybe you guys can help me with this. John Tory just announcing about 10 minutes ago that the City of Toronto is canceling all permits for major events through June 30th. I'm assuming a hockey game, a basketball game, a baseball game would need a permit and would be considered a major event. Am I wrong on that, or do you guys decipher that statement differently, or what?
I would imagine so. I mean, I can't see. That's what it means. I don't know. I don't understand the permit thing. I don't know. But basically, isn't that what that he's saying? Is there's nothing going on in this city until June 30th?
Yeah, but I'm taking it as, you know, those parades and all of that stuff that goes on, all the stuff that clutters the downtown that frustrates me. That's all the stuff. I think that's what it is.
I don't know. I mean, I'm being serious. I don't know if you need a permit. No, I know that. But I'm saying I don't know if you need a permit to host a hockey game or a baseball game. I don't know the way the permit system works. I mean, I would think you need a permit.
To me, the permit, Brian, sounds a little bit something different as opposed to, you know, when the season's going on, it's like a hockey game, a basketball game is kind of standard protocol. It's like work. It's part of, you know, the city and working. It's like a permit would be something else, like the CNE, or I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, parade, maybe Jurassic Park, Maple Leaf Square.
Yeah, right.
You know, those but would need permits, but
it could tie to it, Brian. I think in light of our conversation yesterday and the information that keeps coming out, I don't think it's not realistic to think that that's why teams were kind of, I guess, targeting July, August, if things went well and the world got back normal. That's what you're talking about. And, I mean, I know it's shocking, but I think if we're realistic and go, okay, let's see what the world's going to look like a couple months from now. Brian, you even said it. A month or two from now, we're going to have a whole different outlook and a whole different opinion on everything. I think if you're targeting July and August, it makes sense that, you know, this is – and I was joking, but I'm more talking about like outdoor concerts. I spoke with a musician this morning who's supposed to be on tour this summer. And he's like, man, I don't think it's happening. He goes, how can you expect people with the world to be so uneasy all of a sudden put 15, 20,000 people, even if it is a, you know, the Molson Amphitheater, something like that. I think people will be leery as it is. So I don't think that's an unrealistic date. To shut things down and kind of, you know, almost like the Olympics, it's a planning process too. You know, for any type of event, there's a lot of people that are putting a lot of time and energy into it. You might as well shut that right down from a hard date so that they can go, okay, that event's canceled.
Let me ask you two this.
Yeah.
Let alone going into a big event, when do you two think you would feel comfortable going over to someone else's house for dinner, let alone going to an event?
I'd be fairly comfortable right now, to be honest with you. I wouldn't do it. I haven't done it.
When do you think you would do it?
Well, I think information. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not for me to make that determination. I'm listening to health officials and listening to the government. But if they told me right now, okay, it's all good, you can go across the street, I would. I mean, I think that's an important message to send as well. At some point, we're going to get back to normal life, and we've got to live our life, you know, like we've got to, and you've got to get out. It's not healthy to just be inside and freaking out and scrolling through Twitter all day, which is exactly what I've been doing for 2.5 weeks, and I'm losing it. You know, I thought I was losing it a couple of weeks ago. Now it's like, man, I've been inside for 2.5 weeks, and yeah. You know, but I am, and I'm not overly social. I mean, you guys know that. I love getting together with friends and family, but I'm not out 3 nights a week. I mean, okay. That's not my style. I know a lot of people where that is their repertoire. But for me, I would do anything to go to a restaurant with friends tonight or go grab a beer or go to the movies, you know, and if they told me it's okay and you can do it, I would go tonight. I don't expect any hesitancy from myself once you get the go-ahead, but it's not on me as an individual, as a citizen, to make that determination right now.
All right, let's paint a picture here then. Then our normal lives, and we never like you say, Brian, we're not super social, the three of us with our families and that. We just don't have the time to make it happen. But let's paint a picture that you get the go-ahead, and the go-ahead is what we did, I think, you know, maybe 3-4 months ago, Hayes, you know, the Mandarin. Like, you know, a buffet style kind of, you know what I mean? Like something, yep. Like you put yourself in it where it's a crowded place, you know, people are, you know, the food is spectacular, but it's also in a public area. You know what I mean? Like it's
Well, I would assume those places are probably going to get hit harder once everything opens up. It's going to take people a longer time to get there. But I think we will.
Yeah,
right.
I agree.
Like at some point. I mean, I know this has been brought up, but the Spanish flu 100 years ago killed like 70 million people or something.
Right.
And eventually, everyone got like the Roaring Twenties. By all accounts, people were having a good time. And I think once we do get through this, I expect that people will go back to normal as they should. And I think that's maybe a part of the message that is lacking right now. And I understand it because you want to get it across. Don't leave, stay home. But it almost feels like there needs to be like a second paragraph or a second wave of messaging at some point. Like, but once we get through this, open the doors and go again. You know,
right.
Go live again. Go down to a Leaf game. Go to a Jays game. Go to the bar. Go to a restaurant. Meet up with friends. You know, because that has to happen. I mean, we've got to, again, mental health is it's an underlying part of this right now because we're talking about the virus and COVID-19. Yeah. But man, I that's what I'm concerned about beyond, you know, the primary concern, which again is this virus is killing people and it's making a lot of people sick, but is the aftermath of it, you know, is the inability for some people to maybe step outside their door. And
well,
I hope that doesn't happen, but I'm anticipating it likely will.
It's going to. I'm going to jump in on that, and then I also want to bring you back to hockey. First thing, I agree. I think it's going to take a little while, and I'm hoping in the future that, you know, there is a pill, a vaccine where we all get vaccinated for it, and, you know, it becomes a thing of the past, unfortunately. You know, whether it's penicillin or Z-Pak or any type of thing, like, obviously there's nothing that they have found right now that could combat it, but you're hoping that people smarter than us can sort that out. And you mentioned, you know, the economic impact and actually just getting back to normalcy. I don't know if you saw Pierre Lebrun's article in The Athletic. It was a really good article talking about, you know, how the league, you know, technically, and it's not just the National Hockey League, everyone is hemorrhaging money. And what is it going to look like when you do get the go-ahead? Okay, you can play hockey, you can play basketball again. Are people going to immediately just show up and it's going to be 20,000 packed, or is it going to be, let's see how this unfolds. I may stay home and watch it for a while until we get back into a routine. Well, that will translate, you know, to lost revenue again. So it's, you know, these leagues, especially the National Hockey League, when you're talking about the cap and some of the things that are tied to revenue, it's had an economical impact right now, but it may still have a trickle effect even after the league gets going, because it's going to take time to get back to normal.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I would expect this will have a ripple effect on the salary cap for a number of years. I mean, I think there's a chance they might try to spread it out, make up the difference over maybe 3 years or five years or whatever. So, I mean, that's the news of the afternoon. John Torrey banning all public events between now and the end of June. So we're talking a 3-month period. That's 3 months.
Can we get the tour dog on?
We should reach out. Yeah, we should. Yeah, Grappler, I guess, you know, send him a note. We should call him up and see what that means. Let's get on that. Let's send them a note. Let's get to the city and try to get someone that represents City Hall, ideally the mayor, to come on here and explain it. I think that's a good call, because I think a lot of people want to know what that means. Does that mean?
And there's a thread underneath one of the tweets I saw. Like, from what I understand, it's not just like special events like CNE and stuff like that. It's like all city events are not happening. But I don't know, understand the language or whatever, but that's kind of what I read. I'm not sure, but to get some clarification.
It makes sense. I don't know if you saw, Drager's tweet and a lot of people saying the National Hockey League has asked their players to extend their quarantine and their lockdown to April 15th. You know, you're seeing, and we've talked about this at length, it's not just a big number, although the Tory number is a big number going right to the end of June. It's been most of the leagues have been like, yeah, let's push it 2 weeks. You push it 2 weeks to kind of see what the world's going to look like. I think that's what's most jarring. And what you pointed out, Hayes, is that that's a pretty hard date. And that's a far ways away still from where we are right now.
Well, and there's no playbook here. And right. It's not like every city is going to follow the lead of Toronto. But I would suggest, just based on common sense, if Toronto is through the end of June, New York is at a minimum through the end of June. Yep. Like, New York is effectively Wuhan right now. Like, New York is it is spreading. There are a lot of people dying. The hospitals are overflowing. New York is on shutdown. Like, you talk about eerie video we've witnessed in our own city, where you see cameras of, the Don Valley Parkway, or you see Yorkville, and you see King West and the Danforth, and there's no one out there. Times Square, there's no one out there. Like, nobody. I've seen countless pictures and videos at different times throughout different days all week, and nobody is in Times Square. Nobody's walking through the streets. So if Toronto is looking at this and forecasting, okay, we need 3 months, and let's send the message now, let's get out in front of it, let everyone know, brace for it. I would assume New York's not far behind. California's going through this, like major cities.
Yeah.
Major cities. And that's why, part of the conversation in terms of how they can try to play games or try to get a playoff structure up and going would be, a neutral site. This would probably only amplify that, but what if you've got, you got players living in Toronto, you've got athletes that are in New York, athletes that are in California. We don't know what measure is coming next. We don't know what, rule and regulation and legislation is coming from the government next. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, UFC 249, the headliner is Khabib, and Khabib doesn't think he can fight because he can't get out of Russia.
Yep.
So what happens if you get a state that gets locked down? What if you have, again, a country that's locked down like ours currently is? How is that going to affect, even if you wanted to play in the middle of Nebraska? What if half the players are like, we can't get there? Or players that are in Europe. I'm sure there are a number of NHL players that went back. I'm sure there's NBA players that went back.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised. What if they can't get back over here in time? So, I mean, these are all questions that we don't have answers to, but this is just the latest example of you wake up every day and you wait for something else, and at this point we're not getting anything positive. We're still in the eye of the storm, and more safety measures are being put in place.
You're right, and I think we are all, if you're being realistic, I don't think there was anybody that was thinking, okay, This is going to happen May 1st, or May 15th. And I know there's been some people that have tried to be positive about it. And I think what they're trying to do is brace people and get them in a headspace like, hey, we're in the middle of a war here. And, let's work backwards from these dates. To me, it may not be the most popular opinion, but you can tell that John Tory is trying to, get ahead of a lot of things. And right now, nobody saw this coming. So it's more of a reactive state instead of proactive. Well, he's trying to be proactive to say, just like I come back to, a planning situation. And realistically, if we can get sports back by July, August, and I think that's what, I spoke to an executive yesterday who said that their whole plan, and they've got about 39 of them, he said, has been to submit dates, for July, August, September with our buildings, and basically, the virus and a cure or a potential upswing will dictate what our schedule is going to look like, but we've got all different contingency plans in case, something happens before it or after it. And, there's a lot of people.
Well, which would include just full-blown cancellation.
Exactly, Brian. You're right.
You're working backwards from canceled is really what you're doing. If you're a league, you're working backwards from canceled. If we don't cancel, where are we willing to draw the line on a date? How are we willing to make this work? Will it affect the integrity of a Stanley Cup or an NBA championship or a World Series? These are all, you know, there's variables, there's invariables, there's tangible stuff, intangible stuff. But ultimately, again, we're all just at the mercy of this virus right now and dealing with the direction of government and health officials. And the latest, again, courtesy of our city and our mayor here in Toronto, is public events have been canceled through the end of June. So take that for what it's worth. We'll try to get you more answers on that in terms of what that means, not only for sports, but, you know, parades, for different events. You know, there's a lot of streets in the city that have their own street parties at different times. I think it goes without saying those are gone.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, restaurants, how is it going to affect restaurants, parks, everything? What does this mean for schools, right? Like, I know the province just came out today and said through April, kids aren't going back. But if Toronto's saying we're not going to congregate really in any fashion through June, how are the kids going back?
Yeah, I don't think they're going back.
I don't think they are. Realistically, do you think they're going back?
Anything, I think they're going back early, halfway through August, if we can get through this. I think you would start next school season early if you could do that.
This year's just it's a goner. What's the sense of starting early next year?
So, because you've still got to make up some of that curriculum. Like, you know, these kids that are in the developmental stage, I think there will be some form of transition. You'll have to.
I think there's also an element of once parents start going back to work, they're really going to have to go back to work.
Correct.
You know,
I agree.
There's going to be a lot of, I got to make up for lost time. A lot of different businesses that are on the outside looking in, but once they get back in there, they're going to have to put in overtime to get their clients back, to get customers back, whatever it might be. And if the kids are at home, that leads to that many more issues and concerns. So I don't know if that's feasible or not, but I think it's worthy of at least a mention what you said, Noodles. I think you're right. Maybe they go back in August. You know, the kids don't really know any better. They've been off anyway.
Well, let's be positive for the next 30 seconds here. What's our job going to look like when everything goes on? Like when the National Hockey League comes back and goes, we're going to have a training camp, we're going to have this and that. You don't think we're going to be full board? We are going to be, I mean, the three of us, it's going to be right around the clock.
Yes.
Because it's going to be all hockey all the time, all sports all the time. I'm excited for that at some point, but it may come a little bit later than anticipated, but it's coming. At some point
we're getting back to normal. At some point we're playing games, and at some point we're going back into the buildings and we're cheering for our favorite teams and favorite players, and it's just a matter of when at this point. So try to get you more details on this announcement from John Torrey. Mike Soroka is coming up from the Atlanta Braves, a good Calgary boy. My wife is in the office with me right now distracting me. What are you doing? You haven't been down here all week, and now
just vacuuming.
Out of nowhere,
she's
just
vacuuming
coming in for a walk. Just checking out what's going on in here. So Mike Soroka coming up from the Atlanta Braves. He'll join us in about 10 minutes. We've got Warren Moon on the show, Carlos Boozer on the show, Ray's on the show. We're going to introduce a new arbitration case bit. We'll do that a little bit later in the hour. I'll explain it. We'll get into it. And again, we'll try to get more details on what this means for the city of Toronto and the sports world within Toronto. John Torrey announcing this hour a full ban on any gatherings, any events through the end of June. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Mike Soroka will join us here in a moment from the Atlanta Braves. Hometown is Calgary, Alberta. We've had him on before. He's a great interview.
Fan of Noodles.
Loves Noodles. Love Kiprusoff. Love that duo, man. You and Kipper. And
loves Cowboys, the whole nine.
I think he was just pandering to the crowd. He may have been, I mean, for sure he would know Kipper. Like, seriously, and Iggy and those guys. But I don't know. He did love Cowboys. That's why I've got a lot of respect for him. He's a good man.
Yeah. Cowboys is, there's two bars you guys talk about all the time that I have not been to. It's Cowboys in Calgary and the Roxy in Vancouver. And I got to get there at one point. I mean, I'm not in my prime anymore. I'd walk in, they'd be like, who's this loser? Get out of here.
There was one in L.A., too, called Harry O's.
Yes,
it was the it was the only hockey bar in Los Angeles or whatever it was, Santa Monica Beach or Harry O's.
Yeah, there was a couple veterans that would a buddy of mine, I nicknamed him Fred Flintstone. Fred Flintstone would just belly up to the bar every day there. And he enjoyed himself. It was that was a veteran bar, put it that way. We could ask Ray. I bet you Ray may have been there at some point, too.
Yeah. Well, he played in L.A., so I would assume he has. But that's surprising. I figured if you're in L.A. for a night, you'd be hitting Sunset or something better than Harry O's.
Harry O's is the place where the bus driver pulled the bus out front when he wasn't supposed to be with the boys, and somebody ran a red light and crashed into the side of it, and he was so panicking that he was going to get in trouble.
Yeah, and you guys, I'm sure, helped them out.
Oh, well, no. You always
scattered.
You scatter like cockroaches, but then you collect a few bucks and hand it to him so that he doesn't name names. That's what I would do.
That's the move for sure. All right, here he is, one of the best arms in the majors, runner-up for Rookie of the Year in the NL this past year, top 10 in Cy Young voting, the ace down in Atlanta, Mike Soroka, joining us back on Overdrive. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
We're doing pretty well. We were just talking about, you know, different hotspots throughout the majors and, or I guess in the NHL, like every town you went to, there was always a spot, whether it was a bar or a restaurant. Is that the case with the majors? You know, if you roll into town, all the boys know, okay, this is where we're going in LA. This is where we're going in Chicago, New York, et cetera.
Usually. I mean, especially if we have our team dinners, you know, if we have a team dinners, I know Cincinnati's actually a sneaky one because they got that Jeff Ruby's steakhouse. It was that old prison.
Oh, cool.
It was that converted one. So Cincinnati wouldn't expect for that one, but I know they try and do that one whenever we go there. Mainly, I think, because it's Cincinnati and you want to spice it up too. So, but yeah, definitely Chicago's a big one. The guys love going to Chicago for the food.
Yeah, Chicago's an all-time town.
Yeah, the food.
Yeah.
Dead
well,
man.
we get three or four days there too, right? So, you know, we hope that every year the schedule comes out, we look at what days we have off days in, or what cities we have off days in, and then hope that Chicago is one of the ones that we get into early one day, so we get a chance to have dinner that night.
Well, we've thrown this around before, like being a starting pitcher, if it connects, let's say you're going through Chicago, you're playing the Cubs, and it's a three-game series, and you're not slated to pitch in any of those three games. Like, does that affect how you feel about the city or what? Yeah, what's Chicago like when you know you're not starting?
Yeah, see, and that's happened to me twice, actually, in Chicago, which is kind of a bummer because I actually really want to pitch at Wrigley. I mean, they got I mean, it's one of the best atmospheres in baseball. But, I mean, my agency is actually in Chicago as well, so they take me around. You know, we go down that main street with all the shopping and treat me well. So it's a fun time in Chicago for sure whenever I end up there.
With Mike Soroka from the Atlanta Braves. So, you know, we're all in lockdown right now. We don't know when we're going to be playing again. How are you keeping in shape? What's your workout routine like right now?
Well, right now all I have is I have a fan bike and a few kettlebells. So I'm kind of almost prison style workouts here at home, but, I got a squat rack on the way, so I'll be under that quite a bit. I've been meeting Sean Newcomb out to play catch and, you know, it's actually been really fun being able to play catch with each other at full intent when we're kind of ready to go. Usually during the season, you don't get to see all the other pitchers and you don't get to play catch with them when they're really letting it eat because, I mean, you're saving it for the games. But both of us, when we bring it back in from long toss, are letting it eat at each other. And I get to see some of his best stuff and vice versa. So, as I said before, and he throws me his curveball, I laugh every day because it's just so good. It's so fun to catch, and that's been actually pretty cool for me.
I want to circle back on the travel. We mentioned going to Chicago. Are you allowed, or is it kind of against the code, where if you know you're not pitching, are you allowed to wheel on the plane with golf clubs, whatever, and just act like you're basically not a part of the team, or you got to like do that stuff discreetly?
No, I mean, you can, I didn't last year. And obviously you got to kind of pick and choose your spots. But no, as far as I know, there's no team rules against, bringing your clubs. I know a lot of the older guys do, regardless if they're playing or not. I think, you know, especially if you get into a city with good golf, you may as well, right? You're there for, like I said, 4 days. So, you get out in the morning, play 9 or 18, maybe even 36. I'm not sure. I haven't been out there on the road yet, so I can't say what that's like. But no, I know guys do it, but they make sure that they're smart about it. You know, they're not making sure, or they're making sure that doesn't interfere with what goes on at the diamond.
I love that. Mix in 36, first pitch at 7:07, and you are oiled up, ready to go.
Definitely would not be doing that if you're pitching that day.
Right.
At least as a starter. I don't know. Maybe I'm sure there's some relievers that have played same day. I mean, I'm sure there were some starters that have done it too, but I wouldn't do that, put it that way.
Well, like Augusta is a private course. It's as private as it gets. But you guys would, I guess, technically be the home team, you know, in Georgia. Do you know anyone that can hook you up at Augusta or what?
I know people. I mean, obviously some of the better. Freddie might have played. Freddie Freeman might have been playing there before. But I mean, as far as I've heard, you really, really have to have a name in Atlanta before you're kind of going to get allowed on that course, and you also have to be quite respectable at golf too. You can't walk out there and hack out a 90. I'm not sure they're going to love that so much. So, I know John Smoltz. I know he's been out there probably more than a few times, but he's on the Champions Tour now. So, he's got his name in both worlds, and maybe one day bring a World Series back to Atlanta, I'm sure they'll be a lot happier with us.
Absolutely. I mean, you keep doing what you did last year, man. You'll be teeing off within the next 10 years anyway. I mean, I got to think. I wonder how you would even decipher that. Like, would you have your agent call? Would you call up and be like, hey, is this the clubhouse at Augusta? It's Mike Soroka. I've been lighting it up for the Braves.
No, you don't call anybody. You just go to dinners and you meet rich people, man, and they're members at Augusta.
Exactly.
And you say, look, let's hang out. Let's party. You want to come in the clubhouse? You want to experience my world? Take me to Augusta, and I'll make it happen.
Yep.
It's very simple.
That's exactly it. That's meet him at fundraisers. And,
that's right, man.
That's exactly how it's done. And I mean, it, with the Braves too. I mean, we have tons of lots of connections with us as well, and donors and all that. So that wouldn't be a hard thing to do for sure.
With Mike Soroka from the Atlanta Braves. So considering, you know, the situation we're dealing with right now, where everything's shut down, we don't know when we're going to return to play. Is your manager keeping in touch? If he calls you right now, are you picking up that phone? You know, if you miss his call, is it an immediate callback? Or are you like, just, you know, give me some space here, man. I'm doing my own thing, and I'll see you when I see you.
Yeah, I mean, in baseball, I don't know, it might be a little different in hockey, but I mean, if my manager calls me, whether you're talking about Brian Snicker or you're talking about Anthopoulos, that's not a call you get too often, so I'm picking that up right away. But I mean, we have tons of training staff. Training staff's in charge of talking to us every day, making sure that A, we're staying healthy, and B, everything's going well. Like I said, we're kind of on our own. It's basically treated like an off season right now, since we're one of the few sports that aren't currently in the middle of the season. So I think they're kind of just trusting everybody to get their own work in and make sure that they're staying as ready as possible, so that when we get that call that, you know, spring training set at whatever, hopefully sometime sooner rather than later, but let's say it's June 15th, we start spring training. So, you know, we got to be ready to be able to ramp up fairly quickly to get that season underway in, you know, 2 or 3 weeks as opposed to a regular six.
The pitchers are different than position players. How long does it take you specifically to get that arm? I know you went to spring training, and the pitchers worked towards stretching that arm out and being ready for opening day. So let's say it was June 15th. How long does it take your arm to get ready to play in a regular season game?
Well, most of us, I mean, for me, it's about pitch count, right? So it's not really, I mean, arm life, and life will be there. It's there right now. And once you get to that point, it's about keeping it there. But as far as pitch count goes, we're going to try and start throwing some bullpens here and then get up to the point where, you know, we're doing simulated innings. Hopefully get a chance to meet up with some guys and put on some, you know, backyard live batting practices and, you know, stick around the 45, 50 pitch mark. Because after that, it should only take you about, you know, I'd say no more than 3 or 4 games to get back up to that 80, 100 pitch mark. And then you should be ready to eat up good 6, 7 innings in a real game. So, I mean, really that should be about 3 weeks for starters. And I know that's more than enough for position players and relievers as well.
Well, we wish you nothing but success moving forward, safety and health as well, and always appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you for this, Mike.
No, thank you guys so much. Always a pleasure.
There he is, Mike Soroka from the Atlanta Braves. 22 years old, man, talking like a seasoned vet. He is.
Yeah. I love it.
He's a great guy to have on. It's good to have
basically,
him on.
He basically was saying, I know teammates that play 36 and then play a baseball game.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was confirmed.
Yeah, he didn't want to out anybody, but he's like, I've seen that move.
He started out with 9 holes, and then he was like, man, maybe 18. He's like, what the hell? Maybe some guys play 36.
He wouldn't have said that
if he hadn't have seen it.
Exactly, because it came to his mind. He's like, oh, I remember that guy who ended up playing third base that night. And, yeah, I don't know if he had the Jordan routine going where he's got a dozen in him. But
I love the part about the – he's like, well, I never would if I was starting, but that reliever probably would mix in 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Some grizzled vet who's been in the league for 15 years exclusively out of the pen.
Who needs to throw one pitch to a lefty to get a strike and then walks off the field.
Exactly.
That guy is
one
working
pitch
on his short game.
That guy is just leaving he's leaving the course half pickled, going to the baseball diamond to throw one pitch, and he walks off the mound with his chest pumped out.
Yeah, he's so happy.
Regardless of a winner
or
loss.
I did my job.
Even if the guy, like, rocks that out of the park, too, that one pitch. Yeah. Doesn't matter, right?
I wonder if that's going to change, though, now. We're dealing with a 3-batter minimum. They've implemented these new rules. That might scale it back. Maybe no more 18 in the morning. Maybe it's only 9. Maybe you only play 9.
So you're telling me a guy can't go in for one batter?
Only if it ends an inning. So these new rules, if it's which could happen, right? If there's two outs, you bring in the grizzled vet, the lefty, to strike some guy out, then you can replace him. But if he's coming in to begin an inning, or even if there's two outs and he gives up 2 hits, he's got to face a 3rd batter.
Wow.
So that is going to change the makeup.
The dynamic,
Yeah, absolutely, of bullpens and usage and all that. But I love those kind of stories because you're right. Like, he's a young guy, respects the elders and the vets, but he has seen it before. And there's probably spots where it's like, probably flying into Atlanta. You know, there's some like A-Rod or Jeter at their prime are probably like, we're playing Augusta. Like, we're in Atlanta for a 2-game series. We have an off day. I've got the connect. And it's just spreading through the clubhouse.
I also like the term when he said, we like to go a day early for dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys are hanging off the ceilings of places, going nuts.
Yeah, you're right. A day early for dinner. And those guys on the best of days play hungover because they play so much, right? Like, it's a little different. You play 80 games, you know, they play double that. You know, I've seen these guys.
I knew some ball players, as soon as they sat down at a place, they'd be like, oh, dog, it's shirts off drinking day today. I'm like, I'm not taking my shirt off. They're like, yeah, shirts off drinking. I'm like, no way. I'm not doing it. And these guys were jacked, and it's just not happening.
Yeah.
Not happening.
They know how to party.
Yeah, they get after it.
They do. And you'll notice every athlete. Now, it's a great town. Doesn't matter if you're into sports or not. Chicago is a great spot. But the amount of hockey players and baseball players that I've talked to, they just, everyone wants to get to Chicago. Like, everybody loves Chicago. So, shout out to Mike Soroka. Thank you for joining us. We've got Warren Moon in the 6 p.m. hour, Carlos Boozer in the 6 p.m. hour, Ray's coming up in about 25 minutes. I'm going to throw a couple of arbitration cases at the two of you. Basically, this is the way it's going to work. Two players, only one can get the big contract. Who deserves it if we were starting an 82-game season tonight? That and more next.
I just wish you saw my guy, my routine right now. It is a joke.
In terms of just sitting around the condo all day? Is that what you
mean? No, I blew my back out yesterday. How? I don't know. I have to do the show lying on the couch. I can't sit up. I can't walk. I can't sit. It's a joke.
I didn't notice for the first 45 minutes if that means anything to you.
Yeah, you sound really the same. Good.
No, I know. Obviously, it doesn't affect my voice, but it's like I can't. The only thing I can do is lie down. My hip, my front, like hip flexor, my SI joint, it's all just seized, and I just can't move. And I'm lying down. And if this thing drops, if this Atari machine drops one more time, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I can't do it. Phil Connors said he was fixing it today. And I don't know. It's quite a routine I have going right now.
Well, not to make light of it, but this is probably the perfect time for a back problem. You're not going anywhere anyway. You're just kind of sitting around and laying around anyway. So if you were going to have to schedule yourself in for some back issues, I would say the month of March into April is probably a pretty good idea.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't think chiros are exactly...
They're not available. Like, no. Couldn't get surgery if you wanted to, I don't think.
No,
it wouldn't be considered essential. I don't know. I mean, maybe mobility would be considered essential. I'm not sure. I saw Dr. Andrews has shut down Tommy John surgeries, even though Syndergaard got one like a week ago.
Yeah, he's lucky.
Yeah, he snuck in at Tommy John like right at the last second. But, yeah, it sounds good. I think we're all good here. So Ray Ferraro will join us in about 20 minutes. I thought of this the other day. I was comparing different players, and I saw that the NHLPA players poll was released today. We'll get into that more with Ray.
Yeah,
I didn't see any surprises. I don't know if you guys did, but McDavid best player, Sid most complete player, maybe goaltender Carey Price still getting a lot of love league wide.
At this current time, I had Vasilevskiy as the best goalie in the league.
Yeah, see, I'm still Price, and to me, it's because of the mental aspect. That's the players in the league. They don't want to face that guy. That's them voting. That's not us.
I understand they say that, but they seem to rip four by him most night. I know the team in front of him is not very good. Maybe it's just, you know how you watch, like every time I watch Vasilevskiy, and I think this influences guys' opinions on players. Every time I watch Montreal, Carey Price is getting pulled or getting lit up. And every time I watch Tampa Bay, Vasilevskiy has a performance where I'm like, God, that guy's so good. So maybe sometimes you watch so many games, maybe you hit teams on the wrong night, so you just have a biased opinion of what you're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it's all like you say, you watch 20 games and of a certain team, you're like, you are going to me, migrate that way. But if you ask any, like, goaltender and anybody, like, Price is heads and tails number one, and everyone else is kind of falls in underneath it. But, you know, that could change. I think Carter Hart's got a chance. I think the kid in with the Rangers has a chance. Vasilevskiy, for me, is as good as anybody. You're right. But, I think it's just amazing to see the players. Like, the players don't want to, like, that's the mental factor. Like, you know, that's when people talk about Shea Weber. Well, you know why? All the analytics dopes think that they're smarter when, his numbers and all this and that. But when it comes down to it, whose side are you going to choose going down on a one-on-one? You're going to go down Shea Weber's side, or you're going to go down Victor Mete's side? Because they don't want to face him. That's the problem, is I would rather take the opinion of the guys who are playing the game than the ones who are charting the game.
Think it holds more weight, clearly. I mean, I think playing against somebody, you have a much different perspective. You're in the game. You're on the ice. You're in the corner. You're trying to score on that guy. It's not always factual. I mean, again, sometimes you have a perception of a player or a goaltender, and again, the numbers may not add up. So I think there's a middle ground that has to be considered. But all these players are great players. It's right. Not like it's some guy who's some plug and you're like, what? Every player loves him, but you can't see it when you watch it, or you can't see it on the stat sheet. The stats are there for all these goalies and all these players. They might fluctuate a little bit from time to time. And I do think you get some legacy votes, you know, and Carey Price would be probably in that category compared to younger goalies like Vasilevsky or Hellebuck or whatever, Carter right. Hart, you know, et cetera. But I think the same thing probably applies to Crosby. Like Sid, they both deserve the respect. They're both still great players. They're not as great as they were 5 years ago, but they're going to get legacy votes. And
yep, you're right. Like Carey Price has won a Hart. Like yeah. There's no goaltender in the league playing right now that's won a Hart. Like
right.
You're right. That's a legacy vote because he earned it. You know what I mean? It wasn't handed to him just by accident. Like that's, you know, there's a reason why you go and do that. And that's why when you hear conversations of certain players, they do get the benefit of the doubt because they've actually been there and done that, and we've seen them do it. Until Vasilevsky, which I love Vasilevsky. I love Hellebuck. You know, I think that, like I said, Carter Hart has a chance to be, you know, kind of like that Carey Price, like that good. He's that good. And the Rangers goaltender, Shesterkin, like I think he has a chance to be really special. But, you know, right now, it's just amazing to see. And it wasn't like Price just edged out Vasilevsky. I think it was like 43%.
Yeah, he was at almost 42%, and Vasilevsky was second at 17%. So, like almost half the players polled said Carey Price is still the best goalie in the league. What I did find a little bit interesting, and it's probably because I would put more thought into it than these players. You know, I just, with all due respect to the players, I'm sure they looked at it, threw down a name, and moved on. But asked, you know, if you need to win one game, who is the one player, any position, you would want on your team? And the top four guys are all forwards. Like, you're telling me if Carey Price is clearly the best goalie in the league, why would Carey Price not be the one guy you'd want? He can make the most impact. He's on the ice for all 60 minutes. Or why wouldn't it be Victor Hedman? If Victor Hedman's clearly the number one defenseman, which he is based on this standing, he's going to play 30 minutes. Sid's going to play 20. Right? Like that. And I guess it's just, I understand the star power, and it speaks to why the forwards get paid more. People buy tickets to go see Sid and McDavid and McKinnon. They don't go necessarily to see at the same level for defensemen and for goaltenders. They just don't sell the same way in terms of brand recognition and star power. But I think if you're saying one game tonight, if I think Carey Price is clearly the best goalie in the world, I'm taking the best goalie. He's going to have the biggest impact on the game.
Yeah, you're right. But I guess people's thought process, and I don't know how you look at this, Price can have the best game in the world. All he can do is guarantee a tie.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, whereas, you know, you see one of these goal scorers or one of these impact players, this guy scores a hat trick, then there's a good chance that, you know, he's the guy who delivers it. And I think that's what the thought process is. You know, it's I agree with you, Hayes, but I think other people are saying, you know, this player X can go and get, you know, Sidney Crosby has scored one of the greatest and biggest goals of our generation, right? So they think
I think it's a goaltender league, and I think the goaltender is almost the most important position because you have no chance without it. But there's other people, and I kind of sometimes agree with it, where it's like their philosophy is I'd never pay my goaltender $10 million. It's such an important position, but there's some people that think never, not happening. I'm not paying my goalie $10 million, which it doesn't really equate to the philosophy or the thought process.
That it's the most important position. Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. And, like, I get it, game breakers. Sid is a game breaker. McDavid is a game breaker. I'm not surprised those two got, you know, a ton of votes scattered throughout this players' poll. What has been brought up, and Cervelli wrote it, is that, you know, it doesn't appear that Draisaitl got the appropriate amount of love based on what he's done this year. But this wasn't about just this year. This was kind of forecasting, or this is who do you think is the best player, and if you were building a team tonight, as much as I love Draisaitl, I'm still taking McDavid over Draisaitl. I'm taking McKinnon over Draisaitl. If it's only for the next year or two, I'm still taking Sid. But he would be in that next level, which is a very high level. But I'm still taking McDavid and MacKinnon ahead of Draisaitl right now.
Yeah, we're gonna do the arbitration case at 5:30.
Okay. Well, we can bring it up with Ray too. All right. So we'll get into it with Ray. There was some big news about the Jordan documentary that's going to be released on ESPN. We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it in the next hour. We get some audio. Four battles in the Overdrive Madness audio bracket. We'll play those this afternoon. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.